KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Emeryville.
From the Mission neighborhood.
I'm from Millbrae.
We live in Golden Park.
We live in Oakland.
Mission Terrace.
Barbara Park.
UC Berkeley.
Coming up, the ICE raids may not have happened as promised over the weekend, but migrant and refugee families still live in fear. We'll meet a Cambodian family who spent months fighting a loved one's deportation.
I was in a hole for 23 hours.
Kind of living hell. They don't treat you like human beings, like you're pretty much cattle.
Then the story of a man who learns to forgive his mother.
Well, we used to get wood with a branch. If she didn't have no branch, you'll get like the cable from the radio or anything she could get her hands on.
A new story from Solano State Prison. That's all coming up on Cross Currents. The Trump administration had warned of immigration raids that would target thousands of people nationwide this past weekend. But immigrant rights advocates are reporting no arrests in some of the country's biggest immigrant hubs, Miami, New York, and no arrests here in the Bay Area. Even though they didn't happen over the weekend, ICE raids are still a constant worry for migrants and their families.
So Panad Cheng,
I'm committed to your freedom.
Khun Hem,
I'm committed to your freedom.
Elizabeth Chan is standing in front of San Francisco's immigration building at the edge of a small protest, saying goodbye to her only son.
I'm okay. Don't worry about that. Okay?
Elizabeth is a Cambodian refugee. Under the Trump administration, her community's been subject to a wave of deportations. ICE is targeting longtime residents who have criminal convictions. Many of them have lived in the U.S. since they were children after fleeing the Cambodian genocide with their families. Elizabeth's son, TJ, was one of them.
Okay.
Elizabeth spent months fighting her son's deportation order, and she told KALW's Teresa Katsarilis how that fight has changed her.
Elizabeth knows how to keep her memories safely in the back of her mind. She prays and tries to keep herself busy.
Sometimes I'm thinking about the Buddha's word and make me calm down. It's so difficult, you know. But when I do something happy, like to see friends or dancing like that, that memory is go away.
We come this morning in solidarity with members of our community who are facing unjust deportation.
When ICE detained her son TJ, those memories started coming back.
What are you here for? Check in or turn myself in.
Elizabeth gave birth to TJ in a labor camp. He was born after his big sisters starved to death, but before the Khmer Rouge killed his father. Elizabeth tried to save all of them. She'd had a dream things would end this way.
Before my two daughters and my husband died, at night I dream the big black elephant ran from the west.
As the black elephant stampeded through her home, Elizabeth watched her children scatter in different directions.
When I woke up, I'm so, so scared, and my body is shaking.
After ICE took TJ away, she tells me, all I want is for my children to be in one place together. That's all I've ever wanted.
I try to forget, you know. I don't want to remember because it's too hard for me. And they took him. All my memories came back. Like in front of me, you know, I see everything.
TJ is Elizabeth's oldest living child. He's a barrel-chested father of three who likes to surprise her with groceries. Immigration revoked his status over some minor drug convictions, which he got nearly 20 years ago. ICE shuttled TJ between detention facilities in Bakersfield, Arizona, and Texas. He says the food was mostly inedible, so Elizabeth lent him commissary money to buy chips and noodles. TJ shared a lot of it with the other Cambodian men detained with him.
My first week was I was in a hole for 23 hours. So 23 hours locked down. It's
kind of living hell. They don't treat you like human beings, like you're pretty much cattle.
Behind many deportations is this frantic attempt to stop them. Immigration attorneys file lawsuits, advocates lobby state officials, families protest. TJ's family tried everything. And for Elizabeth, that process forced her to relive experiences she'd spent decades trying to forget. She worked closely with TJ's attorney, Alameda County Public Defender Su-Yun Yi.
She asked me when I got pregnant, when I gave birth to him. She asked me again and again.
TJ's attorney was trying to establish his real birth date, because if TJ was actually a minor when Elizabeth became a citizen, then he should have already been a citizen himself when he pled guilty to those drug charges. You lost track of time in the labor camps, Elizabeth says, but she knew TJ was born in the rainy season. She gave birth to him in a shed her husband built himself, subsisting on the potato leaves he stole for her.
I told her when the Khmer Rouge took my husband, TJ know how to walk. And she asked me again to make sure. When I sharing my story make me feel like release, because if I keep inside, I feel like too heavy and I'm sad.
On Mother's Day, Elizabeth attended a protest in Sacramento with one of her younger daughters, Rumini. She was born after the genocide in the United States, after Elizabeth remarried.
Please give Sue Mom and the elders another round of applause. And honestly, written recently, and they practice on the bus right here.
Elizabeth marched with a handful of other parents of detained Cambodian immigrants, urging Governor Gavin Newsom to pardon their children's crimes and nullify their deportation notices.
These babies did not have a childhood. They had nothing. They had parents that were traumatized. They were told to not share their emotions, to keep it inside.
Elizabeth had shared some of her story with her younger daughters, but she says she didn't think TJ was ready to hear it, and she'd never shared it publicly. But when protesters marched to State Senator Nancy Skinner's office, Elizabeth didn't hold back.
I feel good and I feel strong, you know. It's hard for me, you know. Sometimes it's high word and I cannot talk, but I hope you understand me. All of us that believe in the Pol Pot time, we sad, we scared, and we hungry. We have difficult time.
She told one of Skinner's staffers that she wants her country to accept her children.
Please, please help us to keep our children here. Don't send to Cambodia. And we thank you for listening.
Governor Gavin Newsom pardoned two Cambodian immigrants shortly after this protest, but TJ wasn't one of them. Then in May, about 2 months into his detention, a guard woke TJ up around 9 in the morning.
Security guard or whatever tapped my bed talking about, they call it roll out. Yeah, you got to roll out. Guy actually told me, your lawyer pulled a lot of strings and pretty much you're going home.
In addition to trying to establish his real birth date, TJ's attorney also demonstrated that TJ didn't understand how pleading guilty to drug charges would impact his immigration status. In California, that's grounds for vacating his convictions. And once that happened, TJ's deportation order fell away.
My daughter told me we go to Bakersfield to pick up my son. And so glad. And we cannot wait.
Is it official?
Yes.
Huh? So what's going to happen?
It's official, huh?
So I might have a chance to get my green card back?
Or? I'm the one who's very happy. Yeah. I'm so happy.
I'm still confused because I don't know, like, am I being released? Or I've been through so many of that process already. I just didn't know what they was going to do.
For now, TJ's staying with Elizabeth at his younger sister's house. He doesn't like to talk about his detention experience, but he tells me that as he walked out of the facility in May, one of the guards had some parting words for him.
We're letting you go right now. Anything can happen and you'll be back in here. Took some time off. I basically tried to catch up on things, whatever. And then on a Friday, I went to my job. I mean, money's not the issue. It's just trying to get everything to the way it was.
But Elizabeth isn't ready to move on from these detentions.
If they have protests, I would like to join them.
This is her calling. She wants to do that.
The threat of losing another child first re-traumatized and then radicalized her. And she's worried that TJ will never understand certain things about himself, like why he panics around soldiers, or, and here's just a tiny example, how he developed his phobia of worms.
When I saw the worm, I just took the worm and to cook for my son.
Yeah.
He eat that.
Traumatized of that now. I just don't like worms. I don't go fishing. To me, it's all new. I mean, it's a lot of some stuff I know and some stuff I remember. Yeah. My mom, very secretive. She doesn't talk about those type of stuff. I mean, I personally kind of keep a lot of stuff to myself.
At this point, Elizabeth starts describing the murder of TJ's father. I heard him screaming, she says. I tried to run towards him. TJ murmurs something about the bathroom and quietly leaves the room. About a decade ago, Elizabeth started drawing a picture book.
I have a lot in my mind, but I don't have time to finish it. So I just draw. I like to draw when I was young, especially the face.
She didn't want to forget what happened to her older daughters and her husband, and she wants her surviving children to meet them in whatever way they can.
This is the place that my husband died, and I give birth to TJ.
She's already shown the book to her daughters, and now she wants TJ to help her illustrate it. So far, though, TJ hasn't looked at it.
I want him to know the true story about himself. Look like he doesn't want to know, so I just keep inside.
TJ reapplied for his green card last month. A few weeks later, on the night of July 1st, almost 40 Cambodian immigrants boarded a flight from Dallas, Texas, and flew through the night to Phnom Penh. One of his childhood friends was on that plane. TJ spent the past week checking Facebook, trying to see how he's doing. TJ was home with Elizabeth around the time that flight took off. And as he rebuilds his life in Oakland, she'll be there to help him. In Oakland, this is Teresa Kotsarilis for Cross Currents.
Teresa Kotsarilis is KELW's immigration reporter. You can find her stories online at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next is a story from Uncuffed, our series at Solano State Prison in Vacaville. With help from our team, the men there record interviews and edit them into short pieces that we play for you here on KALW.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
As a child, Francisco Magaña was afraid of his mother. She would beat him, and he's carried that pain with him throughout his life. In this interview, Francisco opens up about his relationship with the woman who raised him. Here's Uncuffed producer Brian Thames.
From the unfair and extreme beatings that he endured at the hands of his mother, to being forced to make an impossible choice, which still haunts him today, rather than blame his mother for who and what he had become, he chose to continue loving her because, after all, she's his mother.
I was born in Michoacan, Mexico. I had three sisters and two brothers. My dad, first I didn't know if he was still with my mom or not, because I hardly see them.
What was your family life like with just your mom?
Today I understand her, but at the time it was like she was always mad at anything. So she would just take her frustration on me. Well, we used to get whooped with a branch. If she didn't have no branch, she would get like the cable from the radio or anything she could get her hands on.
What were some of the reasons that she would beat you?
I believe I was 8 or about to turn 8. Of my uncle, like he used to take care of the house. And the house is so big, it has swimming pool, it has everything. So I used to go help him a lot. I didn't know how to swim. So that day I went and I wanted to go inside the pool. But I had no supervision, so I went and I grabbed myself from the little stairs before you go to the swimming pool. So I was inside and I don't know how it happened, but I let go. So I tried to reach back and I couldn't reach back. So I started going deeper and deeper. When I woke up, I had a lot of people around me. I didn't know that even I drowned. So everybody was looking at me, and then here comes my mom. Instead of telling me like if I was all right, she just got me with a broom and he started whooping me because he said that I wasn't supposed to be over there. I was a pattern of me getting whooped all the time. And the first time I ran away and I got whooped real, real good. But the second time, I remember I was coming from school and we got jumped by other kids. So I was so bloody and I knew if I would go to the house like that, I was gonna get whooped again with my mom. So I patched myself and I told my brother, I'm gone. I know I'm gonna get whooped. She finds out that I got beat up like this. So what I did, I left and I went to the bus station and my thought was like, I'm gonna get in any car and just get away from right here. So I convinced my brother to go with me. I don't know how did she find out that I was there. She went and picked me up, grabbed me, took us back to the house, and she tied me around a tree. She tied me hands and legs. And I remember that was one of the times she is, they call them varas de cascalote. That's some branches there, man. They're like thing, but they hurt. So I remember she got 3 of them. She just whooped me. She didn't whoop my brother. She just got me because she said I was the older one and it was me convincing my brother, you know? That was when I decided anything that I do right, I'm gonna get whooped. If I do something wrong, I'm gonna get whooped. I didn't start caring about nothing no more.
You're here in the United States illegally, right?
Yes.
How'd that come about?
I remember one day I came from school and my mom said that we all were gonna leave to the United States. I didn't wanna come. I didn't wanna come because I didn't know nobody over here. And I said, my daddy is gonna bring everybody, the whole family. At first I thought she was just playing, you know? And we came in a bus. It took us 7 days to get just to the border. So we all came. And I remember when we crossed, we had my little brother. He was about 3. So my mom was carrying him. But that day, I remember exactly the day, it was probably like 30 or 40 some people. So it was a big, big, big crowd. So we had to be moving. Like they all said, like, let's move. So I remember seeing the helicopter on top of us throwing the light. So they kept telling us, don't look up, because the light will reflect the eyes and they'll find us. So everybody's looking down to the floor. We kept moving. One of my sisters, I remember that she was talking about she wanted to go use the restroom, but you got to keep moving. So it took us probably a little more than an hour. And then we realized that she wasn't around. And I remember that I told my mom that I knew around where the place that she was talking about, she wanted to go to the restroom. So I wanted to go back to pick him up. So she grabbed him on my hand and she told me no.
Who?
My
who
mom.
Told you no?
My mom.
What?
Don't go back. She said I'd rather lose one person than lose two. So I still went back and got my sister. I went back and find her and brought her back.
You love your sister?
Yeah, I do. Until this point, I think she's still resentful because of that day. She said that if it wasn't for me, she said she can't forgive my mom, and that hurts me. I mean, my mom, well, anything that she did, I always believe she did it out of love. She didn't know what to do, you know? I think that for me, being in prison is a blessing because it probably prevent me to treat my kids the way I was treated. I was a monster when I was out there. I made amends to my mom right after I came out of the county. She moved out a new house, so we went and do a barbecue, and we spoke about it. She was crying. She was telling me she was real sorry because she felt that it was her fault for me becoming the way that I am. I told my mom that I had a lot of resentment because I never understood why she was doing everything. So I told her, look, now I understand you. I understand what you were going through. You were doing everything by yourself. I understand you, and don't ever feel that it's your fault. Yeah, I went through some pain and everything, but it was my decision. You couldn't stop me if you wanted to. You tried to give me the best you can. And we spoke about it. She told me that she was real sorry for everything she done to us. I said, look, mom, there's nothing to forgive. I love you. You're my mom. You're giving me everything you can to make me a better person. I understand her fully now. That's one of the things that I don't want nobody to see my mom as a monster, because she's not.
That was Francisco Magana speaking with Brian Thames. Brian is a producer in KALW's radio class at Solano State Prison, which is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/Uncuffed, and make sure to subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter to get all our stories and interviews and more in your inbox every week. This music is by Victoria Vega from San Francisco. She's performing at the Ivy Room in Albany Wednesday night.
You don't know how bad it gets missing you. It's poison, it's fire, it's blind desire splitting me in two.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, Priya Mahadevan, Manolo Morales, Jessica Placek, Andrew Stelzer, Corey Suzuki, Jameson Weiss, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
To the